The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Members, House File 3887 is a bill that we'll hear today, and we'll amend it and put it in the shape that the author wants, but we'll keep it in the committee and under consideration for the budget bill on Thursday. And with that, Representative Coulter, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I will move the A3 amendment just to put it in the proper shape.
All right. Representative Coulter moves the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill should be in the order that the author wishes. Representative Coulter, two-year bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I sort of get into explaining the bill, I do just want to draw members' attention to the fact that the A3 amendment did delete paragraphs B and C in the original bill, just so we're clear about the language that we are and are not talking about. Mm-hmm. So House File 3887 represents, I think, a pretty neat combination of interests that I know everyone on this committee shares. Mm-hmm. Expanding supports for students who are parents and growing our child care workforce. And it does so by utilizing one of the most established organizations in the field of early childhood care and education, Head Start. For myself, actually, having just come from our Children and Families Committee and serving on this one, I think it also represents an exciting opportunity to grow opportunities for early care and education and to get more Minnesota kids off to a great start. Specifically, this bill would invest $500,000 to allow our Minnesota state schools to participate in a partnership between the National Head Start Association and the Association of Community College Trustees called the Kids on Campus Initiative. Launched earlier this year, the Kids on Campus Initiative seeks to connect college campuses, students, and Head Start programs to provide mutually beneficial support, advice, and resources, and, if feasible, work to assist with establishing Head Start centers on community college campuses. This funding would provide for a two-year state coordinator position. The coordinator would be housed within the Minnesota State Home Office and pursue the duties outlined in the bill. And what I find particularly exciting about this proposal is that it would also leverage these partnerships to develop strategies to grow the early care and education, I should say, workforce here in Minnesota, something that we know is desperately needed. So with that, members, I'm happy to take questions.
Representative Coulter, you have a couple of testifiers, I think. Why don't we let them testify, and then we'll go to questions. So your first testifier I have is President Runnigan. Is that? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski and members of the committee. My name is John Runnigan. I am the president of Lead Amen, an advocacy organization that represents the 100,000 community and technical college students across the state of Minnesota. And I am here to urge your support for House File 3887 and establish Head Start programs on community college campuses across the state. Just imagine you're a young mother or father trying to build a life for yourself and your family. You work and are paying for school on your own. You enroll at a two-year institution, the more affordable option, while you take your general education classes and narrow down your major. As you register for classes, you try to register your kid for daycare and encounter year-long waits and fees that are higher than your rent. The panic sets in. What do you do if you can't afford quality childcare? Will you be forced to drop out of school and begin again? One in five college students are parents, and this story is familiar to many of them. Across Minnesota, childcare is unaffordable and inaccessible. We have the country's fourth highest infant care costs, with families spending 21% of their income on childcare for one infant. This is a heavy, unnecessary burden, particularly at community colleges, where more than 50% of students are Pell Grant eligible. It doesn't take much of a leap to see how the childcare crisis is adversely affecting parenting students. A college education remains the primary driver of social and economic mobility, and the lack of quality, affordable childcare threatens to impede the path. You can't go to school if you don't have a safe place to send your children. And yet, we know it works. Access to affordable childcare, particularly services offered on college campuses, have been associated with enhanced persistence and completion rates among college students who are also parents. Bringing Head Start to campus will boost college completion, particularly among parenting community college students with the greatest need. And it could yield a triple bottom line, assisting student parents in advancing their education, ensuring a nurturing environment for children, and developing the child care workforce that is so desperately needed in Minnesota. You have an opportunity to do the right thing and have a positive impact on Minnesota families. We strongly encourage your support of House File 3887 to establish Head Start programs on community college campuses across the state. For Lena Men, student parents, and all student parents. Thank you.
Thank you, President Renegade. And Representative Coulter, I believe you have one more.
I think you have two more on the list, but
I believe one has dropped.
Oh.
There is one more.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pawlowski, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here today. My name is Andy Carter, and I'm here to ask your support of the HF 3887 bill and bring quality, affordable child care to college campuses across Minnesota. I am a first-generation college student, born and raised in Minneapolis, and a current student at MCTC, Minneapolis Community Technical College. When I graduate, I want to be an advocate for people that can't advocate for themselves. As a single mother, I know what it's like to face challenge after challenge and to be completely on your own. I have six children. Ages range from infancy to eight. Being a parenting student is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Sorry, y'all. It's my first time doing it. let's see. I have three children that have, one of them is autistic. Two of them have severe ADHD. So because of that, traditional child care is not an option for us. Like many families, we've had to make many tough choices about how to survive on very limited resources. However, I stayed in school because I know higher learning is how I'm going to break the cycle of generational poverty. I don't just want my children to survive, I want to show them the world. To say our household is busy is a gross understatement. The logistics I manage on a daily basis are considerable. I have a minimum of three different drop-off times, as I have children that go to school, I have children that go to daycare, and right now I'm having to keep my infant with me because he can't go to the daycare that is provided. So I have to take online classes, which makes it hard for me because it's easier to be in person. Let's see, I've had to bring my children to class with me when I was on campus, and I've had to like bring crayons and different stuff. I've had them interrupt class, so it made it a little hard for me. I finally get to my schoolwork, and then it's like I end up failing because, well, not failing, I'm doing actually really well. I have a 3.8, but it does make it really hard because I have to have them with me all the time, and doing homework is difficult too. So there has been times where I've had to like talk to my teachers and ask them to be a little bit more flexible with me. My story isn't unique. 22% of all undergraduate students are parents. That means one in five of us are sleep deprived. One in five of us are stressed. One in five of us are juggling plates while on a unicycle. Trying desperately hard to lose our not lose our balance and fall. through tenacity and hard work, I've managed to maintain a 3.8 GPA, but it takes a toll. I'm overwhelmed all the time, worried about school, my kids, the logistical tightrope I walk on a daily basis. I'm always pushing. There's no relief. I'm concerned that I am hurting. I'm hurling towards burnout if something doesn't change. If quality, affordable childcare was available on campus, it would transform my life. I could retrieve my children from one location, getting hours of my day back that are currently spent driving across the city. I wouldn't have to worry about their safety and finding new affordable childcare options each year. I'd be able to focus more on my schoolwork, take more classes, and complete my degree faster. Single mothers need childcare to achieve their full potential. That's why I'm asking you to please support HF 3887 and bring quality, affordable childcare to college campuses across the Minnesota. Tens of thousands of student parents are counting on you. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions? I want to remind the members that our target was 500,000, and this apparently will be our target. So this is why it's here today. So questions, members? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Coulter. So in looking at the DE, I had a couple questions, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. So we're deleting the information about working with the National Head Start Association, and it says participate in the Kids on Campus Initiative. Could you explain what that means?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly. So as I said before, the Kids on Campus Initiative is a partnership between National Head Start Association and the Association of Community College Trustees. It exists more or less to do exactly what the bill does, to work within states with state Head Start Associations to sort of overcome the hurdles and navigate systems to establish Head Start programs on community college campuses.
Representative Robbins.
So it's sort of a national network?
Representative Coulter.
I guess I would say that's an accurate statement, yes.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is no fiscal note, and I know it's a straight appropriation of the target, but in the DE it says the $500,000 will be used for a temporary statewide project coordinator, stipends to parenting students, engaging with local Head Start programs, and other costs for setting up these partnerships. So how much of this is going to go to pay for the coordinator, and how much are we giving to stipends for parents?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe members have in their packets a series of pages. The first, there was a little bit of a miscommunication. The first couple are more sort of broader descriptions of the program. And then the last page is I would call it an example budget based on how a similar program operated in Texas and how it would operate with the $500,000 appropriation. So it's not by any means anything set in stone, but I think it's a fairly accurate illustration of what a budget might look like.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on this sheet, thank you for pointing it out, it says stipends student voice. Is that what would be the stipend for parents in your program?
Representative Coulter.
Yes, I believe so. Again, this is more just an example budget. It would be, I think, left up to the coordinator how exactly those allocations would be.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just concerned that we're setting up, once again, a temporary program. It has $500,000. We're making promises that we do not have funds for in the future. So we are promising or leading parents who really need help these stipends are going to be available, when really we don't know how much of this $500,000 will go to parents. And we have no idea if there will be any ongoing money for this. And I'm just very concerned that the majority has sort of established a pattern of making promises that sound fantastic, and then people start relying on, and then we cannot back it up. And so I just am I think we do have a child care crisis. I think there are lots of ways to address it. I think a much more efficient way is to provide scholarships to parents and vouchers so that they can find the childcare that works rather than setting up a bunch of centers. I just don't see how we are going to have the money to sustain this statewide, and so I'm very concerned about it. Thank you.
Representative Coulter.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and excuse me. I agree we do indeed have a childcare crisis in the state, and last session I was in fact the House author of a bill to invest close to $400 million into our early learning scholarships program. And I think when it comes to addressing the child care crisis, and in this particular instance, when we're talking about students who are also parents, I think we just sort of have to have a take-all-comers approach. I think we have to employ as many tools as we have at our disposal, and Head Start is, as I mentioned, a nationally recognized leader in early care and education, and I think utilizing their experience to work with college campuses around the state, as we have already, as already exists at Pine Tech, Alexandria Technical and Community College, Minnesota State Community Technical College in Detroit Lakes, and the main campus of North Bend Community and Technical College in Thief River Falls. I mean, I think this is just another opportunity to address that.
Herbson Robbins.
Sorry, one more question. So if they've already been doing that without this program, why is this needed?
Herbson Colter.
So I those are all partnerships that currently exist within with the Minnesota Head Start Association, and this is an opportunity to sort of broaden the base of experience and reach and resources that exist within the National Head Start Association, as well as the Association of Community College Trustees.
Thank you.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Colter, thank you for bringing the bill. I realize this isn't a panacea. It's not everything that we need, but I want to talk about the issues that the testifiers brought up, right? This allows them one stop. This allows them to save time. This allows them to focus on their studies without trying to figure out how do I listen to my lecture and deal with a crying baby at the same time. It's, you know, life is complicated. And the other piece that we heard is that 22% of our students are in fact parents. So that is not changing. And as we try to encourage individuals to break that cycle of poverty and become self-sustaining, it seems to me that this investment in our children, right? It's an investment in our children, helps that become a reality. The question I would have for you is, when I look at this, and you know, maybe this is part of what Representative Robbins was going at as well, you know, this is temporary, and I see the word feasibility, assessing feasibility. Are you hoping that in the future that we would be able to expand this program and take it into more of our state colleges and universities?
Representative Colter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleburne, for the question. I certainly would love to be able to do that. I think it's a really exciting opportunity, as I said, and, you know, again, I think what Head Start brings to the table in terms of this conversation is really, really valuable. And you know, we know these partnerships exist already at a number of schools, as I just mentioned, so I certainly think there would be, my hope would be that we could scale it up in the future as well.
Representative Cleburne.
Just to follow up, please. And when I think about some of these campuses that also have programs which are designed to prepare individuals to work in either our pre-K-12 system or begin businesses of their own in this area. Is there a possibility of the partnership between the curriculum and the need for on-hand, you know, on-the-job experience, as well as providing these services for our children?
Representative Colter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleburne. Yeah, I think if you look at the lines 1.11, sorry, I'm not yet through my second cup of coffee, so I'm 1.12 really through 1.14 of the amendment, where it discusses potential partnerships to grow and expand the early care and education workforce. I think, again, that's a really exciting possibility as well with this bill, that it sort of builds on these relationships to, in addition to providing that the early care and education on campus, to work with these credential and certificate programs to grow the early care and education workforce as well.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. One last follow-up. This will be my last question. So, you know, I'm always thinking about our budget in the big picture and what we're spending where and how sometimes these programs are so disaggregated we don't see exactly what we're spending, right? So I would ask that as you're looking forward in future legislative sessions, that you would look and see how many dollars we are spending on training workforce, either in this higher ed bill or in other bills, right? I'm thinking particularly human services, you know, and seeing if as we are spending those dollars in different buckets, if there is a good way for us to bring those dollars collectively together and make sure that we are getting the best bang for the buck. We want to make sure we use all taxpayer dollars wisely. Thank you.
Representative Brer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have about 10 questions or so. So first of all, the statewide coordinator is housed where?
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The statewide coordinator would be housed within the Minnesota State Home Office, so within the Minnesota State system.
Representative Brer.
Thank you. Okay. And so then they would be co-located within the Minn State headquarters, and would they then receive? So the reason I'm asking is because you've got kind of a spreadsheet here, and you have laptops, supplies, meeting expenses, dues and subscriptions. You've got all kinds of different things on this example. So if they're co-located within Minn State, are these relevant expenses, or will they be literally sharing office space and supplies and such with Minn State? That would be the next question. And then I'll ask you a couple more so that we don't have to go back and forth so many times. As far as the stipends for the students, what do you envision those stipends to be used for? And in your budget, it's very small. It's like $60,000 is all, which doesn't go very far when you've got a very large, like you said, 23%, 22% of our students at Minn State are parents, and so you know the population of Minn State is quite large. It's many times bigger than the University of Minnesota. So I'm wondering, what are you envisioning that to be? How much per student? It's $60,000 a year, which is very, very small. So I'm just wondering if you could answer those two questions.
Representative Coulter, to all of the questions.
I will do my best, and again, remembering I'm not yet through my second cup of coffee, so I may need a refresher. I think to the first question, I would have to phone a friend and I think ask folks within the Minnesota State system if they could answer that question a little bit more specifically than I could. I think to your question about what the stipends would be used for, I think it would be my understanding is that these stipends would be used to work with students to just sort of determine specific needs and kind of what the overall landscape would look like at individual campuses in sort of determining how feasible these partnerships might be.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I don't quite understand that because I believe they're supposed to be for students. So let me ask you a different question a different way. So how is the $60,000 per year, according to your spreadsheet example, how are they going to be distributed? Who's going to make that decision? Who's going to take it? Who's going to create the application? Who's going to be processing the applications, distributing the money? How is that procedurally going to work?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick. I would say that would be under the purview of this statewide project coordinator.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're going to have the statewide coordinator coordinate standing up new daycare centers at, we have 57 different campuses in the Minn State system. Several of them have something already. Coordinate all of that and process potentially several thousand applications, since we've got 23% of the entire Minn State population that are parents. You could have quite a load. So they're going to have to create an application, set up an application process, send out applications, receive applications, make determinations, and send out money. So is this statewide coordinator also going to be doing all of that, plus distributing those stipends out? So they have the ability to write checks? Representative Coulter.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I would say your description overstates a little bit the role of the statewide coordinator. This is the purpose of this coordinator position is to, you know, as it says, assess the feasibility of partnerships, consult with the Head Start Association and existing partnerships to develop best practices, work with campus-based navigators and so on. So I would say it's a bit of an overstatement to think that this position would lead to, you know, immediately standing up Head Start partnerships at every community college campus in the Minnesota state system. But I would say that's sort of the overall role of the coordinator, and then what comes from that I think would be a conversation for another day.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, well, we'll move on because that's highly unlikely that that person would have the capacity or time to do all of what you just described, let alone stipends that I'm sure every parent would apply for, thousands of parents. Let's go to the daycare itself. So is this free daycare, and if so, is it 0 to 3, because Head Start is typically 4 and 5 year olds.
Representative Coulter.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, I think we're maybe getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here. The purpose of this position is to work with campuses to determine the feasibility of potential partnerships between the campuses and Head Start. As far as the sort of the details of what those partnerships might look like, I think that is, I mean, those would be conversations that would happen between Head Start and the individual campuses.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, Representative Coulter. So I'm asking you as the author of the bill, what is your plan, purpose, and vision for this position? Because there's two parts to Head Start. You've got the 4 and 5 year olds, which is typically what people think of as Head Start, and then there's a subcategory under Head Start, which is 0 to 3. What I'm asking you is, what are we putting into law here? It's unclear as to what we're talking about. Are we talking about just the 4 and 5 year olds? Are we talking about 0 to 5?
Representative Coulter.
Again, Mr. Chair and Representative Rarick, I would say what we're putting into law is the language that is before us. I think the purpose of this bill is to establish this coordinator position to work with individual campuses and see what their particular needs are. I would not be comfortable either, you know, saying here in committee or putting into law any sort of prescription beyond the conversations and the work that is done with this coordinator and the individual campuses. I don't know that it would be, it would not be my intention to sort of state with any kind of certainty in law what those partnerships would look like.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you are, because you're putting in Head Start. I'm telling you that there's two components to Head Start. There's the overarching, and underneath that is two different programs. And so I'm just asking for clarity as to which Head Start you're talking about. That's simply what I'm asking. I also asked if the daycares that are set up are free to students or if there's going to be a fee. So I'd like an answer to that question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coulter.
I feel like we're just putting the cart before the horse here a little bit, because the purpose of this position is to work with individual campuses with the Head Start National and Minnesota Head Start Association to determine what their individual needs, wants, desires may be. I think those kinds of decisions would need to be left up to the individual campuses.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so you're going to let campuses decide if it's going to be 0 to 5 or 4 or 5, or if it's free or if it's not free. Let me ask you another question, because you had a testifier, Ms. Carter, that came up and talked specifically about her children that have disabilities and couldn't go to traditional daycare. And so since you have that testifier in support of this bill, is that your intention, is to encourage campuses to set up daycare centers that could handle people, children, the children of people where the children have disabilities, whether it's autism or other things, that where they couldn't go to other traditional daycare, as was spoken in the testimony?
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My intention would be that campuses would take as full advantage of the resources and the experience that Head Start brings to the table as is possible.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't know what that means either, but okay, so the last thing I'm going to say is I don't feel like we've really thought about this a whole lot. We're just doing, again, like Representative Robbins said, throwing $500,000 out there in hopes that something sticks. We're not doing an ongoing appropriation. This is a one-time appropriation. We haven't really thought about the end product. We're just going to, we don't know. We don't know how those stipends are going to get distributed. We don't know what sort of encouragement that we're going to have for each campus as far as what kind of daycare it's going to be. And I would say you mentioned several times about the crisis in daycare, and we absolutely do have a crisis in daycare that we created. We, the government, the legislature, and the executive branch have created this crisis because we have driven hardworking women primarily out of in-home daycare providing, and the burden has been unbelievable on them between unannounced visits and they can't have a cup of hot coffee and all kinds of very intrusive things that have happened. And anyone that's done anything in the daycare sphere knows how incredibly burdensome it has become to be a sole proprietor, single in-home daycare provider. And that's why we are seeing a crisis, because we have created this crisis. And so here we have another solution that's not well thought out, that we really don't know what the end product is. We've set up a one-time shot in the dark, $500,000, and it's probably going to do very little other than raise a bunch of hopes and expectations. And we don't even know how we're going to be distributing stipends. So I'm going to be a no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rarick, we're not taking a vote today. But
well, when we do.
All right. Do we know that? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coulter, normally when we do something like this, or at least we should as a norm, have some sort of a report after we've thrown $500,000 at something. Are you open to adding some language that says at the end of this time, when this appropriation runs out, we get a report from this person that was hired, this coordinator?
Representative Coulter.
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you, Madam, or Mr. Chair. And so I'm curious, because it's been stated that there are other campuses already doing this. So first of all, if that's happening now, why do we need to add this if those things are already happening organically or on an as-need basis? Why are we doing this then?
Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. I think I would say that the purpose is to scale it up. My expectation would be that other campuses would have the desire to enter into similar partnerships, but maybe don't have the wherewithal, the resources to do so. And so by putting this forward, we are able to take advantage of the experience that campuses that have partnerships currently have. As well as other experiences, like I said, from National Head Start and the Association of Community College Trustees.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coulter, is there any data out there being kept on the existing programs that are at MNSCU that you know of?
Representative Coulter.
I am not aware of what data may or may not be kept. I suspect our friends at MnState or OHE might.
Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if somebody from MNSCU could come forward and answer that question. What I'm interested in is what are the graduation rates for the parents that are using these programs? How many kids are in them? You know, are they in there long term, or is it a short term thing? That sort of information.
I think someone's coming down. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Pulaski, Bernie Oman with Minnesota State. Representative Scott, I don't have that detailed information off the top of my head. I will say that a couple questions that were asked relating to, you know, our involvement in this. We have currently 11 different child care centers or activities at our campuses. Four of them, which Representative Coulter mentioned, have associations with Head Start. I mean, what we would view this as was indicated here is an opportunity to scale up that work. You know, I just don't have the graduation rates and those off the top of my head, but we'll try to get that for you for the next hearing. And as Representative Robbins mentioned about the one-time nature of this, we're very mindful and would be very mindful of that these are our one-time funds and would work with, you know, the author of the bill and the advocates. So we would frame this up in a way that it is a one-time, a position that is not a permanent position, and would explore all options, including doing a RFP, options of, you know, is there a coordinator at a campus that currently would take on this role? So we would look at all options before we just like, well, let's go hire somebody and move on our way. We would try to make it very clear that, yes, these are one-time funds, and, you know, try to lean on the experts that we currently have in the field. And I will say, thank the author. ACCP, I know the chair is not a fan of a lot of national organizations, but there is one that Minnesota State does participate heavily in, and that is ACCT. Our former chair of the board, Don Erlinson, was the chair of the national organization. So if we can use those connections to leverage more money and resources from partner, because it is an all hands on deck when you're trying to stand up a program like that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Oman, what's ACCT?
Association of Community College Trustees. It's a national network that, as Representative Coulter mentioned, is associated with Head Start on this work from a national perspective. So if there'd be an opportunity to leverage those relationships, obviously we would.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Oman, how do these other, if there are 11 different child care centers in Minsky right now, how did those come about?
Mr. Oman.
Mr. Chair, representatives, multiple different ways. Some are funded with, you know, different revenue sources. I know a number of them have sliding fee scales, and that's how they operate. Some of them have centers on campuses, so we can try to find out exactly. I'm just familiar with the ones that I know of, you know, when you go and visit them when we're on different campus visits.
Representative Scott, when Winona State did the Education Village, a core part of the Education Village and the reorganization of those two blocks of buildings was to have a daycare center and a state-of-the-art daycare center. So I am aware that when the campuses do revamping, daycare centers are often part of the plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask another question?
Representative Scott, you're rolling.
So I didn't get a clear picture, and I don't know if Mr. Oman would have any ideas on this or not, but I'm still not clear on the funding that is set aside for the students, where that goes. I don't see any language in the bill, and maybe I'm not reading it, but I don't see any language in the bill that talks about, you know, actually providing some sort of, whether it's a stipend or whatever it is for a student, what it's for. I just don't see any, I just don't want to throw money out there just to say throw money in this. And I know this is a sample spreadsheet, but, you know, it's what you provided for us and for the committee. So I'm assuming you must have some kind of an idea of what that money, when it says it goes to a student, what that money goes to the student for.
Mr. Oman, you want to answer that in reference to perhaps getting it to us Thursday?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, it seems to me that in reading the DE amendment that there provides a great deal of flexibility that it can go for those items. You know, when you look at the dollar amount, and if there's someone that is going to be onboarded, there's not a lot of money that would be left. So, you know, as far as direct stipends, I mean, maybe that is something that we can work on and come back with some partners. But it seems to me that, you know, the message that I'm hearing from the author is the intent to figure out a path to scale up what's happening in the campuses, and, you know, not necessarily as much about direct payments to providers currently, that it's more of a long-term goal of the bill to have what's happening at a number of our campuses reach across more campuses, from what I understand.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I question the necessity of doing this. I am throwing $500,000 at something that we already know. We've got 11 examples already of what this might look like. I don't see a need to throw $500,000 at something that is already something that Minsku has evidently figured out how to do and could replicate at other college campuses. This seems to be money not well spent, taxpayer money not well spent. So I look forward to any data that I can get from Minsku. I really want to know the graduation rates, how many people are involved in this program, when the program started, how many students they've serviced, how many children they've serviced. I really want to see some hard data on this. If we're going to throw another $500,000 of taxpayer money at something, I want to see if the programs are working. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott, I think we have someone from the Office of Higher Ed who wishes to come down. And I've got three members also waiting for questions. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Miriam Cullimore. I work with the Office of Higher Education as the Student, Parent, and Whole Family Coordinator. And I just kind of want to address several of the questions that have come up. And some of those can be hopefully clarified a little bit with a little bit of understanding of how Head Start tends to be funded. Head Start and Early Head Start. They are a federally funded organization that those funds, we get a bucket of funds from the feds, and then the state also supplements some funds for Head Start programming as well. What this proposal is hoping to do is leverage the existing dollars that are coming from the federal level and from the state level, partner with these national organizations to use an existing technical assistance program that is set up to support the brokerage of these partnerships between community colleges and Head Start centers or Head Start programs that include early Head Start as an option. and so really this is really an opportunity to utilize their expertise, their knowledge, because they've done an assessment across the nation of these types of partnerships to look at specifically what works well, what doesn't work well, what kinds of different partnerships can we try to support as community colleges are looking to better support their student-parent population. Excuse me. In terms of the data that's available, I can speak a little bit to that to hopefully help some of your concerns, Representative Scott. We don't have a lot of good data about student-parent populations in our state right now. That is one of the things that we're hoping to remedy with some of the pieces that are in our policy bill. And so I'm not sure that they'll be able to get you graduation rates of the student parents that are receiving these services through the Head Start centers, but the Head Start centers are required to take a lot of data about the families that are receiving these services and about the children who are attending those schools. That being said, there may be some really good data about how well those kids are doing and therefore how well some of the sort of spill out data that you get related to how well the family is doing overall. And then also in terms of payment, I know you had some questions and concerns around payment. That's determined at the federal level. There are certain federal guidelines around income that would determine sort of what the student would be paying. And so that may not be something that's capable to determine within these partnerships. It's done at the federal level to say who qualifies for those services.
I hope that's helped clarify some of the concerns and questions that have come from the representatives over here. So if there are other questions, I'd be happy to help answer.
Coordinator Cullen, why don't you stay with us? I'm going to go down the list. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. And, of course, our amazing staff from OHE discussed some of the things that I wanted just to bring to the table. What is the funding for Head Start and why it's important? But I also want to say that I believe that this legislation does something that we have been talking about in this committee, Mr. Chair. I think it allows us to figure out, one, how we help our families and our students succeed as they go forward, and how it opens up an opportunity for higher education for our older students or returning students who need to improve their credentials so that they can earn higher wages as they go forward. And I think using a federal program like Head Start that we know is successful and putting these centers into our community colleges will also help us drive some of those enrollment gaps that we have, while at the same time cutting our health and human service costs because children are getting a better start. It is really, to me, these coordinator positions to make sure that we are holistically using those dollars to the best advantage is a win-win, both for our little learners and our older learners. And I just think it's a, you know, if anybody has any questions about Head Start, there are statutes that they can go and read, and it will explain why Head Start is so important for those earliest learners. And I just think it's a win-win for both our state college enrollment problem, our job and employment problem, and our little learners. So I'm really thankful for the legislation, and I'm very happy you brought it forward today. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. I am also... Everything that was said, great. But also, I did want to talk a little bit about the disability question around Head Start. So Head Start is a little unique in the way that they work with kids with disabilities. Because Head Start is federally provided, they actually are subject to some different rules and regulations like Section 504. And so they actually will work with kids with disabilities. They'll partner with the school districts to bring in early childhood special education services. They do a ton and ton of work in that early referral piece. If they see a child that maybe has some different challenges, getting them referred to early childhood special ed really early is really important. So that's a super amazing part that Head Start is able to do because of those connections that they have with both their districts and then also their federal funding. The other thing about kids with disabilities and Head Start that I don't think we've touched on is all parents participating in Head Start get a family coach. And so that family coach does home visits, and then they also have family engagement opportunities where parents can learn different parenting skills and different techniques. One of the cool things about Head Start, at least in Minnesota, and I don't know if this is nationally, but sometimes they will use those parent engagement opportunities and those parent coaching opportunities to help parents of kids with disabilities get connected to services earlier and better. And so it's actually really amazing because they are federally funded. They have to do more than just attempt to accommodate. They have to truly accommodate, and they have to make connections. And they use those federal funds to help provide a lot of that more intensive support than I think if you're a first-time mom or dad or you maybe don't know that it's that there's something that you should be looking for your child. And so getting connected to speech, getting connected to OT, getting connected to early childhood special education. And so I just wanted to sort of address that piece around and kind of brag on Head Start's ability to make those connections with our early childhood special education providers, because it's something that I just think is unique to them. And I'm always just so impressed with the wraparound that they provide in that space. So.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Coulter, for bringing this forward. I've talked a lot in this space and in this body about what it's like to be a single mom in Minnesota, what it's like to be a first-generation college graduate, what it's like to have no childcare options, and to get through college. So I just want to throw a couple of numbers out here just so we can really grasp, like, how important this work is. And you know, I just want to say thank you for hearing us. As a single mom, I see so often in politics that what we go through isn't turned into policy. It's a lot of, you'll make it, You're strong. You're tough. You'll get through it. But even the strongest people, the strongest women I know who are single moms, we struggle so much. So this just really shines a light on what it's like to be a solo parent and to be raising kids and trying to give them the best start we can. So just want to put that out there. But 50% of students who are unmarried and got the Minnesota State Grant had incomes less than $20,000. That is worse than abject poverty. And trying to raise children on that is unacceptable and it's not doable. Student parents have higher GPAs because we know how important it is to be there. We're there to get a job done, to change generations of what our families have been through. 8% of single moms get an associate or bachelor's degree within 6 years, compared to 50% of women who don't have children. 8% of single moms will complete their education in 6 years. That tells us very clearly that there is a huge gap here, and to our committee's goal of increasing enrollment, a huge population of people who want to build better lives for their families, their children, their grandchildren, and for many generations to come. So I really want to just, again, emphasize, thank you so much for bringing this forward. Thank our committee for talking about this. I will say it is abundantly clear to single moms in Minnesota who's fighting for us, and it's this party, and I thank you for that.
Members, when this committee was directly linked to capital investment, it toured campuses across the state. And at the chair's insistence, we also toured every daycare center that a campus had. I vividly recall being impressed by Fond du Lac and appalled by Lake Superior. And there were changes that were made as a result of those tours. I would hope in the future that as we relink this committee with capital investment, that when it tours, one of the first places you should go is the daycare center or the lack of it on every campus. Any other questions, members? Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the last comments by the last speaker are quite unfortunate, saying that one party supports child daycare and one doesn't.
I said single.
I don't think that belongs in this committee. And saying that this party cares infers that the other party doesn't. That's unfortunate and it's untrue, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Just finally, just thank you, Representative Davids, for saying that. I take umbrage with that. We're trying to vet the program and the bill, and the author didn't have answers that satisfied me. And to infer that I don't support single mothers or children is ridiculous. I'm just going to use that word. We have a duty and responsibility to vet bills, to understand what they're doing. I wasn't satisfied with any of the answers that I received from the bill author. Some of those answers have come from the agency, but even still, we have no idea what the stipends are going to be or how they're going to be processed. We have to look at the bill in front of us. You can't infer something big and grand from a conversation about a bill that's not well put together. So I take umbrage with that comment as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the moment.
Members, we'll be putting the budget bill together next Thursday. I want to remind members that the heart of the budget bill will be the funding of the foster grant program, and that's the core part. However, if you have more questions and amendments to this section of the bill, we would welcome them next Thursday. And with that, meeting is adjourned.